Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It is great to be back behind the microphone and talking with you, and I have had a magnificent vacation. Mary and the kids and I had a wonderful time together for some weeks as we were spending some time, and did all kinds of things you ought to do on vacation. I did a lot of reading, did a lot of fishing, we did a lot of boating, and just a lot of the things you do, including some nothing, which is always some downtime that's important, too. We had a great time. I want to begin today by thanking Dr. Russell Moore for doing such a magnificent job guest hosting this program for the last few weeks. He as always, just brought a tremendous mind and a tremendous commitment to professionalism to this task, and it's just a joy to have him as a colleague. And it was, of course, a great confidence to leave this program in his hands for those days. And I know you had intelligent Christian conversation, which is what we're all about. And so thanks to all who helped to make this possible. I have to tell you that you know vacation is over when you got the itch to be back doing what you're supposed to be doing. And that's exactly the way it worked. And so I am thrilled to be back here with you today. We're going to be talking about an article I published this morning. The article is entitled The Case for Early Marriage, early being in parenthesis, because that's the issue here. We're not just talking about the case for marriage. We're talking about the reality that evangelical young people, like most young people, the vast majority of young people in this country, are delaying marriage into the late 20s. And, of course, that's just a median, so actually that means about half of all people are getting married now. First marriage is in the early 30s. There are real causes for concern here, and especially those who are concerned about sexual immorality, those who are concerned about finding the glory of God in claiming everything that the Creator had intended to give us as men and women, understanding the way that sex works, reproduction works, and all the rest, understanding that our bodies are indeed revelatory to us in terms of the Creator's purpose, understanding the bottom line. And Mark Regnerus, who wrote the cover story in this week's edition of Christianity Today, nails it. The reality is the vast majority of Christian young people are not refraining from sexual intercourse until marriage. They're just refraining from marriage. Now, there are some twists and turns to this story that are fascinating, but I want to throw the question out to you. Why are evangelical young people really delaying marriage, prolonging adolescence, and what do we do about it? I am thrilled that this cover story appeared at Christianity Today, because it's one of those cultural events that signals a conversation's going on. If you've been listening to this program and reading what I've been writing for the last several years, you know that this is right in the center of my own personal concerns. I've been talking about this, arguing for this, and it obviously is now a conversation. Some critical point has been reached when a sufficient number of evangelicals know we're in trouble on this, and it's high time we talk about it. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. This is the place to have that conversation. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're always glad to hear from you. Of course, we want to hear first of all from those who will call the program. We also want you to follow us on Twitter. You can follow me personally at twitter.com/AlbertMohler. And you can also follow Mohler Radio. We'll have a discussion going there. Also at Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program. And, of course, we're glad to hear from you by email. Just write us at mail@albertmohler.com. You can find my article at albertmohler.com. You have time over the next several minutes to download the article. From my article, you can find the link to the Christianity Today cover story by Dr. Mark Regnerus, the University of Texas. And we're going to be talking about that in just a few moments. I feel like we're going to have a really good conversation coming on here. I have already received, no underestimate here, at least hundreds of responses to my article posted just this morning. That's a sign, again, of a conversation that's going on. There's a conversation that we're going to be having tomorrow that has to do with the Episcopal Church. Over the last month, of course, the big news came out, and I published a few articles on this at my website, concerning the fact that at its general convention, the Episcopal Church U.S. decided to end the moratorium on the election and consecration of further bishops who are openly homosexual. And no sooner had this action been taken than you now have at least one diocese is moving in that direction. The Diocese of Los Angeles has announced that there have been nominated two openly gay priests as assistant bishops there in the Diocese of Los Angeles, one male, one female. As the New York Times reports, the decisions are certain to rekindle the hostilities between the liberal and conservative factions within the Episcopal Church in the United States and between the Church and the Anglican Communion. I'm going to be publishing an article on this overnight entitled The House Divided, and we're going to be talking about why the issue of homosexuality is one that does divide, necessarily divides. And in light of the action of the American Church, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, announced that his plan was to try to come up with a two-tier or a two-party system of worldwide Anglicanism, one that would be pro-homosexual and one that would believe that homosexuality is a sin. I'm going to argue in the article that I will publish tomorrow morning that that's simply untenable. It's impossible. And we'll talk about why. That'll be the subject of our conversation tomorrow on this program. And again, you can look for that article tomorrow morning. On Thursday of this week, we're going to be talking about something that is often off the maps of American Christians. It's just not discussed enough. Not enough light is thrown upon it. Do you know that in just the last 24 hours, there have been two different sets of headlines about the persecution of Christians in different parts of the world? One of them has to do with the burning of several Christians in Pakistan. And this morning on CNN, there was the report that 200 people have been arrested in a flare-up of anti-Christian violence in a province there that has left at least seven dead, that now confirmed by the government of Pakistan. And then the other story comes out of North Korea. Here's a headline for you. North Korea publicly executes Christian woman for distributing Bible. Folks, it is so easy in the United States of America for Christians to believe that it is safe to be a believer, that discipleship is not a matter of life and death. But for many, many believers around the world, it is. And it is a matter of our responsibility to the body of Christ that we keep up with this, that we are aware of this, that we pray especially for brothers and sisters who even now are facing persecution. And on Thursday of this week, we're going to get an update on what's really going on in some of the hot spots in the world. And we're going to be talking about the meaning of persecution for the Christian church. It's a more complicated story than you might imagine. And we're going to be looking to the scriptures, and we're going to be looking to the history of the church and talking with some folks who will really help us to think through the issue of persecution and the reality of a persecuted church as we are now in the church's 21st century. There are other things out there in the news, of course. Some of them took place while I was away, and I never really had the opportunity to talk about them. But we have the anniversary, for instance, of the first human landing on the moon. And you start to think about the fact that it's now 20 years ago. Here's a little fact that has emerged since that event. If you take the sum total of the population of the United States, and you look at it in terms of its age cohort, more than half of those alive today, more than half of those alive today living in the United States did not personally observe that event. And so we're talking about something that for some people seems like ancient history. You talk about man landing on the moon. If you're talking to someone who is, well, almost anyone 40 or under, it sounds like ancient history. You might as well be talking about World War I, World War II, the invention of the automobile, the invention of radio, the development of the telephone. It sounds like ancient history. But here is a very interesting aspect of that. Almost everything else that you look at in the past, inventions, great technological breakthroughs, there's a follow-up to it. We go from the telephone to the cell phone. We go from radio to television. We go from the Model T to the latest automobile. But when it comes to landing on the moon, you're talking about a very small number of people who did it. And only a handful of those, of course, are now alive. Time magazine did a cover story that really arrested my attention. Moonstruck, the 40th anniversary of Apollo 11. And it gives some vignettes concerning where they are. And, you know, I was fundamentally surprised just looking at this. I shouldn't have been. James Lovell's now 81 years old. William Anders, 75. Frank Borman is 81. Alan Bean is 77. Ronald Evans is now deceased. You start looking at so many of these who are now in their eighth decade or ninth decade of life having walked on the moon. Neil Armstrong himself, 78, the first man to walk on the moon. Dick Gordon, 79. Eugene Cernan, 75. Michael Collins, 78. Pete Conrad died in 1999. Ken Mattingly is now 73. I think he may be the youngest among them. Harrison Schmitt, 74. John Young, 78. David Scott, 77. Alan Shepard died in 1998. Stuart Rosa died in 1994. James Irwin died in 1991. There are a few others, of course. Jack Swigert died in 1982. Tom Stafford, now 78. You know, folks, you look at this, and it's true. Time marches on. A great deal was learned, of course, when human beings first set foot on the moon, the entire project that got human beings to the moon and safely back to Earth. But one of the most fundamental things that happened is that through the exploration of space, we were able to look back at planet Earth, described by those who saw it as a pale blue dot. The big question is, why would something in the seeming expanses of space on that one planet be so important? Well, as Christians, we know. It's because on this planet, God is redeeming sinners through the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ, showing His covenant faithfulness, showing His glory in this creation, and we're the people who get to see it. But only a few got to see it from standing on the moon. We'll be right back on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. The cover of this month's issue of Christianity Today, that's the August 2009 edition, has the headline story, The Case for Early Marriage. As a cover story, this is very significant. Mark Regnerus, who's a professor of sociology at the University of Texas at Austin, has written an article, and it's a compelling article. It's extremely well done. I want to add to it, but I do not want to take anything away from it. And as a matter of fact, he throws some things in it that I think are fairly new to the debate and to which we will be indebted to him as we think about the issue. But here's the bottom line of the argument. For some time, there has been a demographic shift with Americans delaying marriage, whereas marriage in 1970 took place 5 years earlier than now. You're looking in just the period from 1970 to the present of marriage being delayed a full half decade. And you're looking at men marrying first marriage at the age of 28, women at 26, had been 21 and 23. And again, that was a median age. That meant that there were a lot of people, half getting married younger than that, half getting married older than that. These particular statistics, given a five-year increase, are phenomenal. The Census Bureau has never recorded higher stats for the age of first marriage in the history of it keeping this data for the United States of America. Now, as Mark Regnerus argues, that's five additional long years of peak sexual interest and fertility. And he says, remember, those numbers are medians. For every man marrying at 22, there's one marrying for the first time at 34. Big shift in the way human beings live. Now, you look at it and you say, well, where are evangelicals in this picture? Well, evangelicals are just slightly younger at the age of first marriage than the general population. Evangelicals are also putting off marriage. Evangelical young people are getting married, by and large, in their mid and late 20s and now into their 30s as the norm. And what we're looking at here is a fundamental issue that perhaps is addressable to people through the kind of shocking statement that Mark Regnerus uses in this article, because he begins not with marriage, but with sexual abstinence. He talks about the sexual abstinence movement, the message that we've been giving to Christian young people, teenagers and college students for the last couple of decades. You don't have sex until marriage. Not that that's a new message, but it's been a new movement. Now, one of the things that Professor Regnerus helps us to see is that that movement was made necessary by the delay of marriage. But it's a movement that isn't working. 90% of American young people who are unmarried admit to having sexual intercourse. 90%. And you say, well, that's the secular world. Well, okay, Christians specifically, conservative, Protestant, evangelical Christians, by their self-reporting, it's 8 out of 10. 80%. Now, Mark Regnerus is in a very good position to speak about this because he wrote a book, I think indeed one of the most important books on the entire issue. And that book entitled Forbidden Fruit gets right to the fact that evangelical teenagers and young people are pretty much just slightly less sexually involved than the general public. The full title of that book is Forbidden Fruit, Sex and Religion in the Lives of American Teenagers, published by Oxford University Press. Now, I said perhaps the attention of some people will be caught by the kind of, well, in-your-face statement, a very bold and, well, attention-getting statement. This is what he says. He says this, I am suggesting that when people wait until their mid to late 20s to marry, it is unreasonable to expect them to refrain from sex. It's battling our Creator's reproductive designs. Now, that's the kind of statement that's likely to get the attention of some parents, some young people, some pastors. And what did he just say? In the cover story of Christianity Today magazine, he said, it is unreasonable to expect that young people who put off marriage into their mid to late 20s will not, between puberty and marriage, be engaged in sexual intercourse. Now, I think, in a very clear sense, the data show that he is right. I want to come back and say that the first thing we know, however, is that sex outside of marriage is wrong, and that for the cause of the gospel, we are called to many things that the world would consider unreasonable, because they are right. But I think his attention-getting statement is a way that I want to come back to say, it affords me the opportunity to come back and say, I believe it is extremely unwise. It is extremely unwise to delay marriage. And I think there's a theological case for it that goes far beyond what Mark Regnerus argues in this article. I think it gets to the fact that God made us for marriage. By and large, marriage is the institution that makes adults of us. Marriage is the hallmark of adulthood. Now, you look at that and you say, well, what about the Bible talking about celibacy? Yes, that's very important. It has to be mentioned here. If you're given the gift of celibacy, as Paul makes clear in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, it is for gospel service. Paul says, I wish more of you, all of you, were as I am, unencumbered by sexual desire, unencumbered by the responsibilities of being a husband and a father or a wife and a mother for the cause of the gospel. Paul said, I can go anywhere unhindered by the concerns that a married man would properly have. So if you have the gift of celibacy, the church should recognize this, deploy you, support you, pray for you, and celebrate the gift that you've been given. But folks, let's just state the obvious. If 8 out of 10 evangelical young people are having sex before they get married, they don't have the gift of celibacy. So that's a moot point. Take that one off the table. We're not talking about the 20%. We're not talking about the far smaller fraction who've been given that gift and know that gift and will acknowledge that gift. We're talking about people who aren't not getting married. In their own minds, they're simply delaying getting married. There are some twists and turns to this argument we need to look at very carefully. I published my article this morning at albertmiller.com. From my article, you can get a direct hyperlink to Mark Regnerus's very fine and important article, cover story in this month's Christianity Today. Let's get to the phones. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Esther calling from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Go ahead, Esther.
Yes, I really appreciate your broadcast today, and I want to say I'm a 26-year-old young single evangelical, and I think that we are just scared to death that we do live in a divorce culture, but we don't even know what loyalty looks like in faithfulness. And I think we're craving for examples of committed marriages, and unfortunately the church is not full of them right now. So thank you. It's an important subject you're covering.
Yeah, Esther, I think you raise a very good point. I love hearing that in your voice, and I especially appreciate the fact that you're calling the church to an accountability and responsibility here, because I think too often we speak to parents, we speak to young people, we speak to pastors, we should be talking to churches. Because we live out our faithful Christianity in the context of being part of a church. And the church needs to take responsibility for this issue. Yes, parents have a responsibility. Christian young people obviously have a responsibility. But the church, as the body of Christ, has the fundamental responsibility here. And it's not just to get people properly married. Esther, you're so right. It's to keep them biblically properly married. And, we've messed up the marriage issue in so many different ways. Divorce and the accommodation to the divorce culture being front and center. And we talk about that a lot on this program. But, even if everyone before us messes it up, our responsibility is still to get it right. And every once in a while, we need a reset and a restart in the church to say, boy, we've gotten confused on this. We better get our minds and hearts together, prayerfully, humbly go to the scriptures and figure out where we ought to be on this. And then pray for the wisdom to get from where we are to where we know we need to be. I think that's where the church is on this issue. And the fundamental reality is there are a lot of people out there who say, it's not about my young people, it's not about me, it's about somebody else. Well, when you start looking at the statistics, it's not about somebody else. It's about the new norm in evangelical youth culture, which is far short of the gospel, far short of the scripture, and far short of what we know God has intended for all of us. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back on the Albert Miller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Boy, time flies when you're having a good conversation, and that's what's taking place here. I want you to join it. Give us a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And let's go to Jason calling from Winsboro, South Carolina. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, Dr. Mohler. I really think the answer, well, one of the answers to your question is that the church as a whole has exchanged their value system for the world. And what the world thinks is important as far as education and careers and jobs, and the church has adopted that, and we've made it our own, and we preach the same things.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jason. You know, very interestingly, we had a caller we lost, Walter, called in to say that he thought one of the reasons for the delay of marriage had to do with evangelical young people seeking more and more education. We also had Daniel write in at Facebook to say parents encourage education and an established career before marriage. Had a young woman write in at Twitter to tell me that when she was married at 24, I think she said, her parents were opposed to it because they said she did not yet have enough education or an established career. That's the thinking of the world. And I know how easy it is for parents and for young people to get there. And I just want to say, as a college and seminary president, that education is less important than marriage. Formal education is less important than marriage. I fundamentally believe that. I say that to my students here. Hopefully we live it out consistently as an institution and honoring the institution of marriage. But I think long term for the Christian ministry, it's far more important than one be rightly married and then worry about education than the one worry about the education and then seek to be rightly married. And there are just all kinds of problems that come with that. And yet it's very easy to fall into that, because when you think about the wisdom of the world, you know, there are very few people, very few secular parents, I think, I've ever heard of who have said, you know, one of the top priorities in my life is to get my child well married. Instead, get them a good education, make sure they go to the right camps, get their teeth straight, and get a good job in education, get a good resume. I think that really comes short of what we all know the biblical vision is. Let's go to Sean calling from Huntsville, Alabama. Go ahead, Sean.
Dr. Mohler, an honor to speak with you this afternoon.
I'm very glad to hear from you. What do you think?
Well, I was actually just thinking that a lot of times I'm 28 myself. We married a year this October. Someone young recently married, and I honestly didn't give much thought until the previous caller said it, but I do think that education is a huge proponent of it. As well as, I think, in college settings, you know, a lot of young evangelicals going to college, that sort of thing. I don't think marriage, even in those settings, is really pushed as much as it is as maybe, go out, do evangelism, do missions, but not necessarily look for a good spouse, look for a great, you know, someone to really invest and be your partner in your ministry.
You know, Sean, I really appreciate that point. Let me tell you the kind of upfront conversation Christian men need to have with each other, okay? Now, ladies, you can overhear this, all right? 52% of the population, you need to kind of know this is what you're overhearing rather than hearing. But Christian men need to get in settings where we can look at each other and say, all right, young man, you're not married. How are you handling this? You handling this in a way that you can honestly say it's not hampering your discipleship. It's not hampering your testimony. You're spiritually healthy, morally healthy, and you can live with this indefinitely. I can tell you I have had not a few, not dozens, but hundreds of those conversations. And when Christian men talk honestly with each other, especially older men talking with younger men, you get an awful lot of honesty that starts to spill out saying, no, I'm really not doing well with this, but the expectation is that I have to do X, Y, or Z before I get married. All right, this had to happen. I'd be disappointed if it didn't happen. But I've had the contact now from a parent who says, all right, so puberty happens at 13. Are you suggesting that kids can be married as teenagers? No, I'm not suggesting that. That wouldn't be the worst possible thing that could happen for 18, 19-year-olds to get married if they're ready. But I think the clear issue here is that we need an early marker for adulthood that becomes kind of a norm for at least understanding when a young person should be ready to take on adulthood. And at least by age 22, the graduation from college, college kind of becoming the new high school experience in terms of the formation of young adults into full adults. I think at least by the end of that, we recognize there's a new stage of life. And I think parents ought to be far more concerned with their children growing into holiness and godliness and understanding and celebrating and living out in covenant faithfulness all that God has given them, indeed, in their sexual and reproductive gifts, and being less concerned with some of the other things that people think are the hallmarks of success in life. They really come up short. The phone number is 877-893-8255, and we'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to get to as many calls as we can here. First to Stacy, calling from Macon, Georgia. Go ahead, Stacy.
Hi. So thankful for your program. And I just wanted to say that I got married at the age of 17 and just celebrated my 29th anniversary. Have had a very happy marriage, and I'm very thankful for that. And I have five adult children, and while I wouldn't necessarily recommend to them or any other young person that getting married at that age is right for everyone, the point I'd like to make is that it seems that the longer our young people wait to get married, the more selfish they can become. It just seems like it can be hard to adjust to being in a relationship where there's a lot of give and take the longer you remain single.
You know, Stacy, that is verified by the experience of so many couples and by those who work with them. The longer you delay marriage, especially into the late 20s, early 30s, the more there are adult long-term habits of life that are developed of not being married. It makes it far more difficult to get married. You know, I often say that my wife and I, we married young, as soon as she graduated from college. And we were ready to get married before then, waiting for her to graduate so that we could get married. And it was the right time for us for many reasons. And when we got married, I mean, we did all of the kind of the first things together. We didn't have, neither of us had a credit card until we got married. Neither of us, had ever bought, this or that until we got married. We had to start with a furnished apartment because we didn't have anything with which to furnish an apartment. So we didn't have, all the his and hers stuff you have to go through. And that meant it was an experience in which everything we have, we've gotten together. We've done it together, picked it out together. We know the story behind everything. And it's a part of the shared experience we have in a marriage. I think it's the way it should be. I think those who do not have that are robbed of something very, very important. And the more you delay, the more you have your story before there's an our story. Let's go to Candace calling from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Go ahead, Candace.
Hey, Dr. Mohler. I have a good single friend who's 30, and she is increasingly discouraged by the trends. And so she was really frustrated by this story. But I was just so encouraged saying, to see this on the cover of CT and to think that maybe a good number of pastors will see this and wake up to the notion that the church has a role to play in helping these single people marry well.
Now, Candace, is this the Candace I think it is?
This is the Candace.
This is Candace Waters, yes, the author of the book Get Married, What Women Can Do to Help It Happen, right?
That's right. Yeah,
all
this
right.
This is a matter close to my heart.
Yes, and you and I have shared some hot water as we have waded into controversy together on this. And I really appreciate you calling in. Candace, I wrote my article this morning because, you and I have been a part of this conversation for a long time. The folks at boundless.org and elsewhere, this has been an important conversation. It's been an important conversation in many of the circles where I speak, certainly on this campus. And now all of a sudden it's on the cover of Christianity Today. I have to tell you, I see this as a breakthrough.
Well, I do too, and CT contacted Steve and I, my husband Steve, and said, will you guys write a response to this? And we jumped at it and said yes, but unfortunately, I think everybody they asked said yes. And I'm thinking maybe they were a little surprised how many people were encouraged by Mark's article and agreeing with it. They finally found one person to write a rebuttal, and I think she really sort of changed the subject.
Yeah, she did.
Rather than, you know, arguing with the merits of his case.
That's right, and that's one of the reasons why I didn't deal with the responses. Although, I will tell you, I thought the response from Reed Mercer Schuchart.
Yes,
I'm not sure that I pronounced his name right. If so, I apologized. He is professor of media ecology at Wheaton College. I thought he did a great job. By the way, he and his wife, Rachel, are the parents of seven children.
Yes, I think he had something recently in Touchstone.
Yeah.
And love his stuff.
Let me just read a paragraph from his article. He said this: imagine that a species for the first 5,600 years of recorded history arranged its culture so that when youth began to grow the bumps and curves that signaled biological adulthood, the culture said, you're an adult now, and welcome them to adulthood's responsibilities and freedom. If you were a boy, you could read in synagogue, et cetera, et cetera. You then went on to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what got broken, Candace? I mean, certainly you must have a lot of women ask you this question.
Well, they do, and I think, frankly, there's not very much positive pressure on young men to get married young. And there's a lot of pressure by parents on men and women to front-load their lives with education and life experience, and this notion that you can't get married until you're financially independent. And those hurdles keep getting higher and higher, and parents are saying, don't get married yet, you're too young, you don't have a degree, you don't have enough money. And here these boomers are, these parents who have enough money to help these kids get married, and they don't see that. They pay for their schooling, but then they threaten them, if you get married, we're going to cut off your money for school.
You know, Candace, I had a very interesting experience over the last month as I was doing some special reading projects. We were on vacation. One of them I did was on the Amish. And this is a long story. I'll have to encapsulate here. But, you know, we have this myth of financial independence that's different than the reality. When you go back to an agrarian age, a young man was marriageable age. He got married. And in a farm culture, his father or relatives would help him to get situated on a piece of land. It wasn't like financial independence was. He went out and made enough money to come back and buy a farm. He got started out on the farm.
Well, you know, what's so funny is that that's why we have wedding showers for brides and grooms. And what's happening now is you have a wedding shower for a 30-year-old bride. You're not buying her a starter blender. You're buying her the upgrade blender.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the opportunity to finally get all the Williams-Sonoma gear you wanted for your kitchen.
You know, Candace, there's one part of the Mark Regnerus article that I found particularly interesting because, as a sociologist, he went at this in a way I thought was very helpful. He talks about the fact that men delay marriage because they can.
Absolutely.
You know, because they can always get married when they want to, but for women it's very different. We're about to run out of time here in this segment, but I'd love for you to explain so that listeners can hear, why is it different for women?
Oh, it's their fertility. They're running out of time. If you want to be a mom, you've got to get married young enough that you can still have a baby.
Yes, and the likelihood is that once a woman reaches 24 or 25, it's less likely every single month that she'll get married.
Well, that's right, and her marriageability goes down the
you know,
older she gets.
That means, and we know this is true, that the fundamental responsibility here when it gets to individuals is most on evangelical young men to grow up and get married. Because when it talks about being ready for marriage, the majority of young women in Christian colleges and universities say, we are ready now. Where are the guys? Which means the better asked question is, where are the men? Candace, thanks so much for your call. When we come back, we'll have some final thoughts and a final caller or two. The phone number is 877-893-8255. You can find my article at albertmuller.com and link from there to the Christianity Today article. Great to hear from Candace Waters and from all of our callers. When we come back, I'm also going to share with you some of the wisdom we've received from Twitter and Facebook. Let me tell you, social media has been a buzz, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. One last caller. We're going to get in from New Brunswick, Canada. Greg, it's your turn.
Thank you. I just wanted to share that I think we need more of a vision. So the problem is stated well, but the vision needs to be there. And the vision that God gives in Scripture is that He wants a godly home. that is based off scriptural principles that God lays out, and it's different than the world in many ways. And the church in some ways wants to emulate the world more than to set a scriptural standard for what the church should teach. And men like Paul Washer or Denny Keniston, more of an Amish type of person, are kind of bringing teachings in that kind of area. And I found it personally edifying and encouraging listening to them to kind of get, as a young man, a heart for biblical manhood and a sense of how to raise a family for God.
You know, that's such an important point, Greg. I really appreciate your call. The issue here should be how we find and display the glory of God in every dimension of our lives. And the biggest issue, and this is the way I end my article, the biggest issue is not what is lost in terms of sexual morality. That's not insignificant. We know that. The biggest issue, what is lost, is the loss of the glory of God in the right ordering of his creation and in his creatures enjoying, finding fulfillment and faithfulness in the patterns of life he has established for us and the institutions of life he has given us, most importantly here, marriage. Appreciate so much that call. We do need a vision, not only of a godly home and a godly church, but of godly life and regenerate creatures, human creatures, Christians, believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, finding our ultimate joy and fulfillment in the very center of what brings God the greatest glory. And it's one of the central principles of the Christian life and the Christian worldview. I appreciate so much you wrote us by Twitter and Facebook. I wish we had more time. Let me tell you, the predominant issue that has come out of this positively is the testimonies to young couples who got married and say, we were married 18, 19, we were married 20, 21, we were married very early, as soon as we were able, and we regret it not a bit. And the Lord has blessed us in so many ways. I can't tell you, I got a stack of messages that came that way. Also, on the kind of the problematic side, those who wrote in to say, there's just not enough Christian maturity out there, Christian faithfulness out there. One of the issues that that many young people are finding frustrating is finding a spouse who's biblically, theologically, convictionally committed, gospel committed. And that, again, points back to the issue that this is an individual reality and responsibility. This is a family and parental responsibility. But Christians, this is first and foremost a church responsibility, as the people of God bear the responsibility to see all Christians live out faithfulness to the glory of God. And yes, marriage, a big part of that. Let me know what you think. Always write me. Glad to hear from you. Write me at mail@albertmiller.com. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about why a house, a denomination, a church cannot stay divided.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.